This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
We have on the line from Sydney, Ghassan Kassissier. Good morning, Ghassan.
Hi, how are you going?
Well, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Now, you are the Policy and Development Coordinator of the Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby in New South Wales.
That's right.
Sounds like a very big job. Yes.
It's a fancy title.
What are the issues that the rights lobby is aware of in terms of either people you've dealt with in Australia or because of information that you're getting around the world as far as gay, lesbian, transgender people and being persecuted because of their sexuality?
Sure. Well, in Australia, we apply the refugee definition from international law,
yep.
Which finds that if you fear persecution on the basis of your social group and one of those social groups have been found to be sexuality-based social groups, then you can be granted asylum in Australia for that basis. We did a report last year, which we sent to the Refugee Review Tribunal in Australia, called From Lives of Fear to Lives of Freedom, where we reviewed 133 decisions on people that had done just that, that applied on the basis of their sexuality in Australia.
And how successful is that for people? How hard is it to apply for asylum in Australia because of your sexuality?
Well, from our study, we had 133 cases,
yep.
And 55 decisions before the tribunal, and the rest were appeal decisions. There was a success rate within that sample of about 60% for male, gay or bisexual men, and only 22% for lesbian or bisexual women. Having said that, there were many more applications on the basis of male sexuality than there were on female sexuality, which suggests that lesbian women are first of all less likely to apply, but more likely also if they do apply to be not successful.
And do you know why?
Why? Yeah.
Well, we located a variety of factors which played out in the tribunal process, which we were concerned about. One of them was the issue of stereotypes and some of the stereotypes that are being applied in the making of decisions. In particular, one of the recurrent stereotypes was this notion of a gay lifestyle and an expectation that the applicant, you know, before the tribunal member, will have a particular way of living their life, either in Australia once they've arrived or in their country of origin. And so there's questions about, you know, their frequenting of gay and lesbian venues, whether they identify with certain cultural features of gay communities. And, of course, some of these people would have had no experience with being gay or lesbian.
Well, no. You can imagine someone coming from Iraq talking about, do they visit a gay club? Hello?
Yeah. Absolutely. And it was not just back in the countries of origin, but also in Australia. Once people came to Australia, they were almost expected to immerse themselves in Mardi Gras and other, you know, gay and lesbian events. So that factored against people. The other issue in particular for women is that persecution might not be as obvious in the sense that men seem to be, from the research, more likely to experience state-based persecution. So they were more likely to have criminalisation of male homosexuality that might factor into their application and those sort of things, whilst women were more likely to experience persecution in the private sphere from family members. There was a particular horrific story about a Zambian woman that had gone through incredible persecution, stories of persecution from sexual assault. Genital mutilation was one of the issues that she'd experienced, and she was actually refused at first instance On appeal, the court actually remitted it back to the tribunal on the basis that they didn't take into account the gender guidelines which were issued to the tribunal. But, I mean, these sort of stories are just littered throughout the case.
Yeah, and presumably someone like that woman would have had to have appeared before the tribunal?
That's right. So you make an application first before the Department of Immigration and Citizenship, and then it goes on to the tribunal if you yeah. choose to appeal it. And then if unsuccessful before the tribunal, there are very few limited grounds yeah. for a further appeal to the federal court.
Yeah, and I guess the reason I ask that question is people who are refused have then got the added trauma of having to appear before the tribunal and have their lives kind of dragged through a court, if you like, and have to absolutely prove the horrors that they've been living or the fear of the persecution that they've been living under.
Absolutely. Look, one of the issues is that that when they get to the tribunal, you've got a stranger before you that's asking very personal questions about your life.
Especially for people from other cultures, like a woman from another culture having a man asking her about genital mutilation.
Absolutely. I mean, that's one of the issues. The other issue that they face is actually, in terms of proof, is the lack of documentation around their own experiences of persecution, but the experiences of persecution in that country altogether.
Yes.
And particularly for sexuality-based applicants, you have a situation where there's actually very few documentation of sexuality persecution in that country. I mean, Amnesty International only published their first major report on sexuality-based persecution about 10 years ago. And in many cases, lots of countries have an absolute silence on what comes out of that country in terms of what are they doing to gay, lesbian, bisexual and transgender people in that country. In some cases, Amnesty has found that even places like Iran, it can be very difficult to find out what's happening because the stories that are coming from the government are very different to what's being reported on the ground, and there's a lot of silence and a lot of difficulty in actually documenting that all the persecution that's happening, and so that actually factors against applicants because the tribunal says, well, look, I can't find any evidence that there's persecution in your country, or in some cases they find that they take sources that are really not credible, and we found them referring to sources like tourist guides, and one in particular, the Spartacus Guide. And the Spartacus Guide, if you're aware of it, is basically a tourist guide of cruising venues and saunas and restaurants that might be gay or lesbian friendly in a variety of countries. And this guide is particularly focused towards Western gay male travellers. And has been used by the tribunal as basis of country information to assess whether persecution exists in that country.
How absolutely idiotic.
It's quite alarming. In one case, the guide was used in the case of a Ghanaian man, and he had a horrific situation where his parents, I think, had commissioned the murder of his boyfriend. He was suicidal. He'd been fired from his job, suffered death threats, and had his home ransacked. And the Spartacus guide said something like, you know, there's 11 gay bars in Ghana, and so sexuality is more accepted. And, of course, you know, that sort of reportage of persecution was completely different to his own personal experience. But because of the use of that kind of information, he was accepted, but it made his case more difficult.
Wow, that's incredible. So how has the work of the rights lobby been received in this area? Are people listening to you in government?
Well, there was questions raised last year in Senate estimates by Senator Nettle about whether the tribunal had done any training. And on the basis of those questions, we actually decided to look further into there's some research that had already been done by Professor Jenny Milbank and Catherine Deverne.
Yep.
And we decided to update some of those research to see whether those issues were still surfacing and report to the tribunal about those issues for the basis of improving their processes advising them on training material that would be relevant.
So the tribunal really didn't have a good understanding of the issues.
To some extent, there are some improvements we found from the initial research, which was published, I think, in 2002, and our research. But the problem now was not so much the that there weren't good tribunal members, but that it wasn't consistent across decisions. So there were some fantastic tribunal members that had a very sensitive application of the law to the basis of sexuality-based persecution, and others that were struggling.
Yeah.
And so our report was sent to the tribunal earlier this year. We still haven't had any formal response, except for... I mean, it's quite a substantial report, about 100 and something pages.
Mm.
So we're still waiting on an official response from the tribunal. Mm.
We'd love to hear from you when you've got that. It'd be great to talk to you again when you've got that response and see how you're going.
Kassan, do you think that one of the problems is that perhaps in Australia even, that, you know, some tribunal members, people who are in the Department of Immigration, still think that it's not such a big deal for people who are gay and lesbian because if they really wanted to, they could just hide their sexuality? You know, the old, well, why don't they just hide their sexuality and then they'll be okay? Do you think that still is going on in Australia and people are not taking it seriously enough?
Look, I think in some decisions that's certainly apparent. There was a 2003 High Court decision which actually said to the tribunal, you cannot say to people, you have to be discreet.
Mm.
And if you are discreet, therefore you will avoid persecution.
Mm.
But what we found in our research was that that decision has been applied well in some decisions, but in other decisions, the tribunal has found if the person has adopted by their own choice, you know, a course of discreet behaviour in terms of their sexuality, i.e. they haven't come out and they don't want to, then they won't really consider, you know, whether they would be persecuted if they went back to their country.
Yeah, so you can't win either way, can you?
That's right. And, I mean, we said to them, look, there's lots of issues around the problem with this concept of discretion, because often it's not in anyone's choice. They can be outed, they can be discovered, and there was one case where a couple that had met for about 4 years, I think it was, in private, and they would hire hotel rooms outside of the town so that they could meet and have their relationship. And one of the partners was eventually killed by his own family members when they were discovered together at one time. And so that kind of accidental discovery is all that needs to happen for some horrific, tragic circumstances.
Because let's face it, the reason that they are discreet is that fear of persecution. Mm. And if in fact the law says it's the fear of persecution that we take into account, then they're quiet because they're fearful.
Absolutely. And so it's important that tribunal members ask why is someone, you know, concealing their sexuality. And of course, the international law around freedom of expression would also suggest that people should be free to express however they want to express their identities without that fear.
Most definitely. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Kassan. It's been a really interesting and enlightening conversation, and we definitely would like to hear back from you when the results come back from the tribunal about how your report's been received.
Not a problem. My pleasure.
And we have to thank ourselves for being in a very lucky country, don't we?
Absolutely.
Thank you very much, Kassan Kasisye from the Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby of New South Wales.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.